You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
This is just game by game. We have to go game by game, analyze game by game. And when we have a better answer, the games will tell us. It's not like I'm gonna decide. The game would tell us. So right now we're in a good competition mode here internally, and that is helping to raise the level individually and collectively among ourselves.
All right. Our thanks to Soccer Matters correspondent Victor Ariza for getting that sound with Wilmer Cabrera. And you saw him. It's analyzing game by game. So it's. Dual here. It's getting results, but also continuing to monitor, analyze, and find out what is best for your players and your team. And I think this is what's made it very interesting, Joe, this year, as we welcome you back to Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, Joe Willison Studio. I think that's what's made it, you know, I told you during the break, it's great for guys like me in the media. We got something to sink our teeth in with the Dynamo now.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's competition all over the board. Coming from past experience, when you're playing a little bit and then you don't play for a while, it sucks. You want to get back out there, and I think you fight just a little bit harder during practice, and you know, you have that extra motivation, and I think that ultimately, you know, is going to give you the best product on the field.
Dynamo goalkeeper Joe Willison studio here. All right, so Joe, I told you when I went away a commercial break, I left the room. But I had said that we had put out this question about the great individual rivalries in sport. And, of course, we started it off with the easy one tonight, Messi and Ronaldo. You got one?
I mean, it's hard to top Messi and Ronaldo, but one that I've enjoyed watching over the years is Nadal and Federer. I think
beautiful.
You know, I'm not a huge tennis guy, but you know, watching those two, it's so exciting. Obviously, they're both getting a little past their prime at this point, but I think the last 10 years watching them compete has been pretty exciting.
Isn't that – see, even sports that I don't follow that much, when I see somebody that's that dedicated, that passionate, that competitive, that attracts me to watching stuff I might not watch. Like, you know, I just told a story earlier about MotoGP and that I had never been to it live, and by going live, it just – goes to a whole nother level. But when you see how competitive these guys are, and I mean, they're doing gymnastics on bikes at 200 miles an hour, shifting their weight. And I like that one, Nadal and Federer. And I would say, you know, you could say what you want about Ronaldo and his haircuts and all that stuff and the off field stuff. That guy is competitive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
he's unbelievable. The dedication that he has for his job and for his craft is, you know, beyond compare. And I think there's a reason why he's the best, if not the best, one of the top two in the world.
All right. Who's your favorite goalkeeper outside of Tyler Derrick? Who's your favorite goalkeeper?
Currently or past and present?
Can be past and present. How about that?
My favorite of all time is Edwin van der Sar. I was a big Manchester United Ooh. Fan growing up. Big fan of Holland growing up, and Edwin van der Sar's a big lanky guy like myself, so you know, I always tried to emulate him when I was growing up, and he's definitely my all-time favorite.
Dutch, the tallest people in the world, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's you say van der Sar, and I'm looking at you, and I'm going, yeah, you guys are about the same height and the way you looked in goal. How about present, modern day, that's active now?
Probably Buffon. He's, in my opinion, the greatest of all time, I think. To be able to do what he does for as long as he's done it at that level is unbelievable. And you even see it today with some of the saves he makes. A lot of goalkeepers, when they get older, they obviously get smarter, their positioning gets better, and they lose a little bit of that agility and some of that quickness. But he still makes the cat-like reflex saves that he made when he was, you know, 20. And he's, you know, pushing 45 now, so... it's pretty incredible to watch.
He's, I think it's 9 of 11 shutouts in Champions League, something like that. We may check that, but it's been ridiculous. And when I look at him and I look at those types of goalkeepers, they essentially make people better in front of them, right? Absolutely. Your job is to make people better in front of you. When I played and had a goalkeeper that was very – I had some good ones behind me. Mike Barbrick, Bill Irwin, who was in Houston for a short spell. But you just felt very comfortable with the knowledge that they were behind you, and you took all their information. How much a part of your game is that? And making sure that your communication is stuff that's going to make people in front of you better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think first and foremost, you need to make the saves that you should make. And I think you need to have a certain presence about yourself, and you need to instill confidence in the guys around you. I think when you're playing as a defender and you have confidence in the goalkeeper behind you, you have more confidence in yourself. When you know what you're going to get out of your teammates, and you're not thinking that they're going to do something crazy, you can worry about yourself and play your game. And as far as communication, I think it's huge. Obviously, I'm able to see the entire field, and I think that plays a big part in getting us organized and getting us getting our defenders in the right positions to prevent the opportunities.
I'll clue you in on something right now. Toronto 2-1 over Orlando in Toronto right now. It's in the 72nd minute. Last thing, and you got to answer this quickly because we're up on a hard break, Joe. And again, I thank you very much for coming in. What part of your game has evolved the most here in the latter stages? Because we do know you guys are like fine wine. You get better as you get older.
I would say, there's a few things for sure. I think my positioning has gotten better as I've gotten older. I think the more experience, the more game experience that you get, you see things differently. I think that my confidence has gotten a lot higher. I think it's a big thing for goalkeepers is playing with confidence. And not guessing, just making yourself big, trusting yourself that you have the ability to make saves. And I think that goes a long way. I think my confidence from the beginning of my career to now has grown immensely. And like I said, for any goalkeeper, confidence is a huge thing.
Joe, we thank you very much for coming in studio tonight. We wish you the best of luck against Orlando and get another shutout.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
One and only Joe Willis in studio here. Really thankful that he came in. Great young man. Has represented the Dynamo beautifully. He'll be doing it again Saturday against Orlando City and Kaká. So make sure you're there. HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets. Fifth caller right now. I'm going to give you a pair of tickets to the Dynamo and Orlando City. I'm going to remind you also, if you want an Irish pub with that Irish feel, then the Gorgeous Gale is the place for you. Head over to the Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside Drive. Catch all the best soccer and football matches there. Stop by for a pint and a bite. They got great whiskey offerings there. Say hello to my friend Peter. It's an open feel, lots of monitors. The Gorgeous Gale, the place to be. TheGorgeousGale.com, an official pub of Soccer Matters. We'll take a Bud Light break right now. More to come, including Warren Barton and Robbie Earle.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, you know that I am very, very, very passionate about pediatric cancer and pediatric cancer research. Friday, June 16th, Norman Whiteside of Manchester United, Northern Ireland fame, and Chelsea's Bobby Tambling are going to be in Houston. It's going to be a night of legends. The stories these guys are going to have. It's put on by the Houston Red Army and also the Bayou City Blues, which are supporters groups of Manchester United and Chelsea. Hosts Tom Clare, Jesus Martinez, and myself. This all benefits the Curing Children's Cancer Fund, cccfund.org. This will be held down at the Doubletree, 400 Dallas in downtown. It is a night not to miss. You don't have to be a Chelsea or a United fan either. If you are just a general soccer fan, a Premier League fan, dinner, raffle, auction, Friday, June 16th, 6:30, all goes to a great cause. You can call 281-812-4805 for tickets or Facebook group / Houston Red Army. Be there. Norman Whiteside played in the World Cup at 17 years of age for Northern Ireland. Bobby Tambling, one of the all-time leading scorers for Chelsea. It is going to be a great night. Speaking of great, it was a great day for Juventus here, and one of the men who was on the analysis panel for Fox, former Newcastle United defender, Warren Barton, who is a great friend of the show. He joins us now. Warren, how are you?
I'm very well, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, so before I get into the Champions League today, just another word on, you know, your former club, Newcastle, getting back to the big time.
Yeah, back to the promised land. Rafa Benitez has done a wonderful job. They made it slightly nerve-wracking towards the end, but it wouldn't be Newcastle if there wasn't a little bit of drama. But they're back, and great credit to the fans that have stuck with them. And now hopefully Mike Ashley will help Rafa, and Rafa stays, and we can build on this. So it's a great time for everybody involved with Newcastle Football Club.
Warren, as I always remind our listeners, you're heavily involved in player development in the U.S. You do spend a lot of time working with young players. When you look at managers and coaches, I know you look at it with a different eye sometimes than other people when you're actually in it and or have worked with young players. So when we look at Massimiliano Allegri, is it fair to say he may be the best tactician in the world right now based on what Juventus is doing, tactically speaking?
He might in generally be one of the best package of managers because management is a certain style as well. And I think the way he's handled players like Mandzukic, asking him to play out of position, who's in the past has been quite a volatile character. Dani Alves obviously coming across from Barcelona, getting the best out of him. And then obviously switching to three at the back and four at the back seamlessly. So I think his stock is rising. As I said, I think he not only gets the best out of defending, being organised, being disciplined, but going forward as well, very exciting team. So there's no doubt now that he's put himself not only as one of the best tactical aware coaches in the game, but probably one of the best coaches in the world. And there's a lot of good ones around. So there's no doubt of his understanding and what he's been able to do. I'm a big fan of his. I think he understands the game that he did. He gets the best maybe 10-15% out of players that have maybe been let go or people think that, well, you can have them on loan, they're not good enough for us. And for me, that's a great sign of a coach. And, they're a joy to watch Juventus against a very, very explosive, dangerous, young, exciting Monaco team. And it was a thrilling game today.
You mentioned the magic words there, man management. Getting players to alter their own game for the benefit of the greater good, how difficult do you think that is with the modern soccer player now?
I think it's one of the hardest things to do. And, there's a phrase that they say, buy into it. And that's what players have to do. And, they have to put their own personal expectations and their own personal goals to the side and what's the benefit of the team. And in a business and in a player now that are more self-driven, if you like, it's more about them with the image, the social media, the agents, their own profile. To do it with the modern players is phenomenal. In the past, you did have the leaders and captains and the clubs dictated to players that they had to do it and had to stay. But now players hold all the cards, whether they're in contract or out of contract. So to do that in the level that he's doing and to do it with, as I said, players in the past that have been quite volatile and said, look, I'm a striker, that's where I'm playing, again, shows the great character of the club as well, and I think Juventus have got that. It is a Bayern Munich, it's a Juventus, it's a big club like a Real Madrid, Barcelona, so you buy into the philosophy of the club and the mentality of the club, and he's been able to do that with modern players, and it's not just happened, it's happened time and time again, and don't forget, they lost Popa, Pirlo, and they haven't missed a heartbeat. They've gone in and brought other players in. Sami Khedira is another player that just fits into the mould what they need. And I think it's very refreshing to see in the modern game.
Warren Barton, Fox analyst, great career at Newcastle with Newcastle United. All right, so Monaco comes in with all this youth and pace today against Juventus. And one thing that I was looking for, all right, were there moments where Juventus's shape might be slightly altered, when it was pulled apart maybe a little bit, or they might be slightly vulnerable because they don't give away much despite whatever it is they do on attack. So when I saw these moments, I'm thinking to myself, all right, let's see if now Monaco can do something. And then in the blink of an eye, Juventus would consistently regain control of the situation. I don't know whether it was through decision-making, recoverability, whatever it is. But I marveled at that. Is that simply because they have quicker thinkers that can process these situations quicker than others?
No, I think they had experience. I think there was a time when Monaco, after the first 7 or 8 minutes, then Monaco really got into the game for a good 15, 20-minute spell where they was dominating and they was relentless with their pace, with their energy. And the likes of Buffon, Chiellini just got themselves together. They had a chat to each other, pull round a little bit, tuck round a bit, Dani Alves, come in a little bit here in the midfield area. So I think they managed the game themselves. You know, they've got a lot of experience on that field. And there are times when, like any, like a boxer, you're on the ropes and you're getting hit, you're getting jabbed. You've just got to close up and manage that period. And they did that, and then they grow, and Higuain gets more into the game. Dybala gets more into the game, and then they start influence. But I think the best player on the field was Dani Alves. I think his defensive work was excellent. He made a tackle when he needed to, and then he got forward and supplied the wonderful back heel in there. But they had experience, Glenn, just to see when you're up against the ropes, like, let's just get together, let's have a chat, let's get a bit more organised, and then they see through a rough period. Because you've played the game as well. There's certain games that you're outplayed at the moment, you're getting picked off, and there's areas where you look vulnerable, and they was able to close up, clamp up, and then see through that. And it's great mentality to have that. And you could visually see it with the players, talking to each other, grabbing each other, squeezing each other up from a free kick, pushing each other away to get out the penalty area. And it's, that's a side of the game, in the modern game, I think it's missing. You know, communication, leadership, things like that with younger players that need to develop a little bit more.
How about yourself? When you were making your way in the pro game, you get your debut, and you're at this point of your career. Was there a point at some place in the journey of your career where all of a sudden you felt that sort of category of experience click in a little bit more, where you know you've kind of been through things and now you felt like you could figure things out in maybe a different way that than when you are a younger player?
Yeah, definitely. I think and I know you've got Robbie O on the show. When we was at Wimbledon, and one of my big games was against the mighty Liverpool, when John Barnes and Ian Rush and Ronnie Whelan, Peter Beardsley was playing. And John was giving me a tough time. John Barnes was giving me a tough time. And I just got myself together. I had leaders around me, like Vinnie Jones and Andy Young, that just said, look, just stay here. Don't keep leaving yourself getting exposed. And you did it yourself, and you see through. It was a simple pass. It was maybe winning the first header. It was growing into the game, because there are moments. And I just realised then, if I got through that patch against, which I think one of the best players that England's ever come across was John Barnes, and managed to deal with it in my own way, then it gave me the experience and confidence to go forward. Because you can always fall back on that. That's with young players, that they don't have that experience to fall back on. And I think Juventus have had that. And as a player, I had that. That I knew I was having a tough time, and I knew he was giving me a tough time. So I had to get a little bit more solid and a little more focused and closer to people, rather than getting isolated, because that's what John wanted me to be isolated so he can exploit me. But it was a lesson that you learned quickly at Wimbledon. And as I said, Robbie will tell you that, because they made sure that you did it straight away and you all stuck together and you pulled through it as a team, and you win as a team, you lose as a team.
Warren Barton joining us here again, Newcastle, during his playing career. Also, you catch him on Fox during Champions League coverage and many other things when it comes soccer-wise. John Barnes, you know, when you mentioned those names, I'm sitting here, John Barnes, Peter Beardsley, you're a defender. Was that a sleepless night before that game?
No, it was exciting. Don't forget, Glenn, I'd played amateur soccer, so I'd been told it twice. I'm too small, never going to make it. Playing amateur soccer, working, and then going off to play soccer. Then the next year, I'm playing against Liverpool that have just won the double. So, no, it's excitement. It's everything that I've fought for. But, no, and then you come against the likes of Giggs and Omri and Sudan and these players. So, no, you thrive. You want to play against them. And, you know, at the time, it was a wonderful experience. And I think you ask any player that's with you now, they wish they could have their times back, because when you're playing, it goes quick. But I did know in my career, I loved every minute. I think maybe because I had to fight and scrap for what I got, whether it's non-league or playing lower league football. And as I said, at a younger age, being rejected, saying that you're not big enough and not good enough, it made me appreciate it. So for the 18 years that I played, I loved every minute of it, the training, the games. I remember Ian Rush saying to me towards the end of my career, just sometimes when you're playing at Old Trafford or Anfield, just have a look around. Just take in for 10, 15 seconds the atmosphere, the noise. You never walk alone, the buzz of the stadium. And enjoy it, because it soon goes. And he's right, it flies by. So, you know, as I said, I love the game. And even now, I listen to your radio shows. I look at blogs. I watch La Liga, I look at Bundesliga, MLS, EPL. it's a sponge. You've got to involve yourself in the game. And as I said, maybe coaching and doing my pro license. I love the game. And I love whether it's the kids, AYSO, or you're watching what we did today, Champions League soccer. You're learning all the time.
I had a teammate that did a lot for me, actually, from a mentoring piece when I first got into the pro league here in the U.S., and this was a while back. His name was Peter Carr. He played for Carlisle and was obviously there was no Premier League, but he was a part of, I think, three promotions. He was on that team from the fourth division to the first, which obviously we know is not going to ever happen again. But he I remember, told me a story about coming down the tunnel at Anfield and said he got out in the warm-ups, and he said he just started – he burst into tears for no really recognizable reason.
That's what the game can do to you. You know, if you've been a fan – you know, I was an Arsenal fan, so for me to go and play at Highbury, you know, 5 years ago I was standing in North Bank, because there's an area of the stadium called the North Bank, and going to watch the likes of Liam Brady play there and Frank Spaceton and David O'Leary, then, you know – 5-7 years later, I'm actually on there scoring a goal. So
incredible.
It does, and that's what the game can do to you. And that's the passion that it has, that's the excitement. And I think, Glenn, you know as well as I do, the way the game is spreading across this country, whether it's at grassroots level or MLS, you know, Orlando with their new stadium and Minnesota coming into it and Atlanta building a whole brand new stadium. You know, it's exciting times, and that's what the game can do to you. It can give you such highs, and it can make you very, very depressed as well. But that's why we love the game, and I think that's why it's so exciting going forward, how this country is absorbing it all and interested in it and has its own identity, which is great.
Not that I had the career you had, Warren, but, you know, I always sit here and thank my lucky stars for the fact that I've been able to spend a lifetime involved in this game, whether it was through coaching or now in the media. And I'm being dead honest here. I think about that every day. You know, when I'm at home and I'm doing research for a radio show or a TV game, just like you, but I totally think of that every day, how lucky I am. And, you know, back when I retired here in the States, there wasn't a lot of opportunity. You either went into youth coaching or you probably dropped out of the game.
And I think that comes across in your work. I think it really does. And I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, sugarcoat it here. It's because that passion and that enjoyment and that drive, because you'd watch the games anyway. You know, we'd be standing in a bar or be standing sitting at home watching the games anyway, because it's in your blood. And that's how people, you know, get more knowledge about the game. And as I said, I'm learning. Just because I've played 18 years and it doesn't mean I know it all. It doesn't, because I've got a pro license and everything else. And I think Robbie will tell you that, you know, work every time you're watching a game or you're watching a warm-up or something new comes along. And I think, you know, what the modern game has shown now with the likes of having, you know, how lucky are we to have Ronaldo and Messi at the same time pushing each other? You know, my brother had like Diego Maradona, and that was it. You know, that was enough for one generation. But we've had what Ronaldo did the other day and Messi did in El Clasico. They're doing that week in, week out. We sit there as stats, and like you said, we're doing our work, and we're saying, oh, you know, Messi this season, he's only got 43 goals. Only. You know, and it's mind-blowing the statistics that these two are showing. As I said, it's an exciting time, and I think the people that, like yourself, that have been here at the beginning and go, but you can, that comes across in your work, what you're doing, and I think fans see that. They always see the 100% as the ones that who really love it, who really understand the game and really want to be involved and really passionate about the game, and I think it comes through, which is what the game needs, rather than people just going through the motion, because there has been people that do it.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, I think that's what people recognize about your work. I love the analysis you provide. It's great stuff. And I also love the fact that you come on here regularly. So thank you for that, Warren. And thank you again for joining us tonight. We appreciate all that.
No problem, my friend. All the best.
All right. That's Warren Barton. And you catch him on Fox. And of course, we ought to just get him on one time and just talk strictly about his career at Newcastle and what it's like to play up in the soccer-crazy northern part of England. Quick word here before we go to break. Red Army, Bayou City Blues. Again, I'm going to mention the night with legends. Norman Whiteside, Manchester United, Northern Ireland. Bobby Tambling of Chelsea. It's a dinner. It's a raffle. It's an auction. It's Friday, June 16th at 6:30. Hosted by Tom Clare, Jesus Martinez, and myself. But I will tell you that Tom Clare has driven this, and Jesus, these guys are really doing a wonderful job. And if you're in those supporters groups, you guys need to get out and support Tom and Jesus. Curing Children's Cancer Fund, the recipient, cccfund.org. Facebook group / Houston Red Army for tickets, or 281 812-4805. This is a night not to be missed. It'll be 6:30 to midnight. Whether you're a United fan or a Chelsea fan, a Premier League fan, or just a soccer fan in general, these guys are going to impart some amazing stories. We've had Norman Whiteside on here already. He's so excited to come over. Take a break. We got more to come. Bud Light break.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A quick word here for Liberty Kitchen. Now, Liberty Kitchen knows how to serve up lunch, brunch, and supper. Think of it as modern American comfort food. Liberty Kitchen staples, deviled eggs topped with fried oysters, cowboy surfers, oysters on the half shell, grilled chops, steaks, ribs, fish, you name it, they have it. Liberty Kitchen signature cocktails, plus all kinds of cold beer on tap. Now you know why Liberty Kitchen is a regular stop for me. Liberty Kitchen, located in the Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks, and Treehouse, Memorial City. Beautiful time to segue into the Premier League, and why not do it with a guy who played in the Premier League? Robbie Earle joining us now. You see him doing the analysis on NBC on a weekly basis in their great coverage of the Premier League. He joins us now. Robbie, how are you?
Hey, Glenn. Nice to see you.
Always good to have you on the show, and we've been very much enjoying all the Premier League coverage. Let's just start off by talking a little bit about Chelsea and Spurs, who have separated themselves. Who for you has played the more pleasing to the eye football for you?
Pleasing on the eye. I would have to say, just on a head-to-head, I would probably say Spurs, Glenn, just in that the sort of enterprise with which they play forward, the width they get from the two fullback positions, their sort of diversity of ways of breaking team down. You know, Harry Kane is obviously the focal point as a centre forward. But then you get people like Dele Alli, who's got, you know, an incredible 17 goals from midfield. Christian Eriksen's productivity is up this year in terms of his goals and his assists. Jungmin's son from the wide areas is a threat. So I just feel that probably in terms of goal threat, there's a little more goal threat in Spurs maybe than Chelsea. And the way they play open attacking football, I think it's been outstanding. But that's to take nothing away from a Chelsea team that are probably a little bit more solid, have a bit more resolve, a bit more defensive structure, you know, and have done magnificent under Antonio Conte. But just, I think if I was buying a ticket for either two teams right now, I think I would buy a Spurs ticket because I just, you know, marvel at some of the football that they're playing.
Antonio Conte, okay, we all know he's a full-on guy. In other words, emotionally invested all the time. Obviously, they picked up N'Golo Conte. They didn't do too much in the transfer window when it comes to changing a lot of people. But let me take you back to Conte and his personality. Is there a danger sometimes having a manager that's full on like that? I mean, I just wonder if this guy's ever going to bust a blood vessel, you know? I mean, it's just incredible,
he's
the energy.
Rechargeable batteries, mate. At night, he plugs himself in and then he recharges and comes again.
The emotional investment is what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And Robbie Musto and I discuss this. We do a radio show after the shows. And we discuss this a little bit just in terms of, you know, he's so full on. He's so invested in his players. You know, you see him on the sidelines. He's urging people to close down and win the ball and break on the counter. And there may come a point, and it'll be interesting going forward, where after a while, you know, if you have a manager who's that committed, who's that deep, that sometimes it wears on you and you can only kind of get up for so many games under that guy. Now, there may be a point where something has to change. And generally what happens, it might be that some of the players have to change and the chemistry has to change. The manager stays the same or vice versa. Sometimes you'll find actually the manager has to change because it wears so much. And there is some similarities. They're very different people and very different in the way that they do their job. But there is some similarities between Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte in that Mourinho's very intense. It's a bit like us against the world, and that works to a certain point. But I think, you know, it's interesting that Jose Mourinho generally has 2 or 3 year cycles, and that's because after a while, I don't know if he can continue to do the same thing and still expect the same results from a group of players. I think you almost have to have some new bodies who haven't heard it before and can be sort of turned on by it. So it is interesting in terms of how he manages and how that will sort of go on in the long term. But I think it's one of those where we have to marvel at what he's done. I mean, this was a group of players who finished 10th last season, Glenn. We're way 31 points, I think, behind Leicester last year. As you say, he didn't have to do too much in terms of, he just had to get people back onto the level that we'd seen before. The team had won a title. You bring in N'Golo Kante in the middle of the park to add something different. And all of a sudden, we're seeing winners again. Eden Hazard's back to the Hazard we saw a couple of seasons ago. When he's in the mood, Diego Costa's as good as there is in the league. Pedro comes up with big moments. Cesc Fabregas has been important, even though he's not been a mainstay. And you know, that change to the back three after a heavy defeat against Arsenal, and he decided that was the time to change. They haven't really looked back since then. And I think one of their strengths, Glenn, is that they can play however you want to play. If it's tight and defensive, they can do that. If you want to have a bit of a physical, they've got enough bodies who can do that. If, you know, the counter-attack is scintillating when they break from back to forward. So they've just got probably a few more dimensions than any other team playing that style. But it's interesting in terms of the management, how long Antonio Conte can keep doing the same thing and keep expecting those good results.
Robbie Earle joining us, NBC analyst here, as we talk Premier League now here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. All right, for me, I don't think Liverpool, Manchester City, United, I don't think any of them deserve Champions League football. We do know 2 out of 3 are going to win the sweepstakes. Do you agree with that based on the consistency of their seasons?
Yeah, well, I would slightly differ with Liverpool. I mean, I looked at Liverpool at the beginning of the season, and to be honest, I said in terms of quality of squad, depth of squad and what's available, Liverpool's first 11, I think, can probably go toe-to-toe with most teams. And to be fair, against the top six, if there was a top six league against the top six teams, Liverpool would be top of it because they've won more games than anybody else.
Correct.
But in terms of depth, in terms of quality, I think Liverpool are the sixth deepest team of the top six. So I always thought it was going to be a real stretch for Jurgen Klopp and this group of players to make it. So in some respects, you know, for them to be sitting third at the moment, and you know, we've got a bit of a gap between the likes of Man City, Manchester United and Arsenal now, I think a testament to the manager who has been outstanding, to a group that are learning how to defend better, because I don't think they're a naturally defensive team in terms of that instinct. And they've managed to get goals from a number of sources. Mane was excellent until he's been injured. Coutinho has been a threat. Firmino's got goals. And they haven't really been able to rely on Daniel Sturridge, who should be a guy who should be getting 20 goals a season in that team. So I think in some respects, they deserve a bit of credit. If I look at the teams beyond there, I'm starting to agree with you. Manchester City, Manchester United should easily have been top 1, 2, or 3 with the group. If you're talking about the group of players they've got and the quality of manager who's managing them, then they should be vying for the top 3 places. So to be scrambling around for a 4th place spot, I don't think it is great. And then Arsenal, with Arsene Wenger, it's been a story of the season. We'd expect it, as Arsene's done every year in 21 years, finished in the top 4. But this year, I think we've all felt that they're falling a little bit behind. In terms of their play, in terms of their tactics. You know, and this is normally the time of season where Arsenal are going on an unbeaten run and solidifying their place in the top 4. It's going to need something special from them and a collapse from teams above them for them to make it this year. So a huge summer coming up at Arsenal. But I still think an interesting summer for both Manchester City and Manchester United, who, you know, can't be content with sitting outside that top 3. Two clubs, certainly two Manchester clubs, with the amount of money they spend, with the high-profile managers they've got, you know, need a turnaround in the next 12 months.
All right, here's something that burns me up. So before the Manchester derby, United fans are all talking about 3 points, going there and getting a win against their noisy neighbors, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, then we watch Mourinho camp everybody out in the second half and not even try to win the game. And then after the game, I hear everybody going, oh, what a great point. What a valuable point. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it could be a valuable point. But Boy, when I look at that and I think of the history and the tradition of United from an attacking perspective, boy, are people lowering the bar or what? Mm. I mean, that really bothered me because they did not try to win that game. And it's not like they went on a plane 5 hours away. This was their rival. Yeah. How do you die so how do you take a point and claim this was a win?
It's interesting, Glenn, because I'm a little bit like you, and I remember, you know, playing against Manchester United teams that took you to the sword, you know, and attacked you from all areas of the pitch every time they got the ball. I've worked in the media now on Manchester United teams under Sir Alex Ferguson that were very much the same, that was built on going forward in attacking and wide playing pace and good football. And then, in fairness, Jose Mourinho's come in, and I don't think he's that kind of guy. I don't think in any club he's been at, regardless of the quality of players he's got, that he's a front foot manager. I don't think he's one of them who gets at the opposition and tries to attack. His basis of playing is defensive first. Don't concede goals. Don't make mistakes. Wait for one or two things to happen and you may win the game. Now, what he's done in the past, Jose Mourinho, and it's winning titles in a number of countries, is pick up points however they come along. And if it's a 0-0 draw, he takes a point. If it's a 1-1 draw, he takes a point. If it's a 1-0 win, he'll take the 3 points and be happy. Now, where I think there's a contrast, I think Pep Guardiola, and listening to Pep a number of times this season, he wants quality football. He wants control. He wants possession. He wants attacking. And I said the other day, it's almost as though, you know, if he doesn't get that, Pep would almost like give the point back. You can have that point, that draw. That isn't how I want to play. But I think Jose is very different. Now, where the big change comes is that Manchester United fans have been used to being served up a certain style of football, which I don't think they're going to get through Jose Mourinho. And this is where the collision may come in terms of going down the road. Are Manchester United fans going to be happy just getting points at certain places and saying, well, as you said after the Manchester derby, that's a great point? Or are they going to want to go back to the days where they went for 3 points, they went for goals, they went for entertaining, quick football? Because if they are, Jose Mourinho might not be their man. And I don't know, we're talking now, what is it, like 5 years since Sir Alex sort of left the spot, or coming up to the fifth season now, Sir Alex sort of left the hot seat. We haven't really seen Manchester United evolve since he's left. And there could be a question of when will we see that again? Is it another 2 or 3 years? You know, is Jose going to be given the time and the money? Is somebody else going to come in and revamp this thing and take it forward? So maybe Manchester United, for people like us, Glenn, who remember those glory days, might not be for the future or the immediate future. Maybe there's a different way Manchester United are going to have to go forward and to get back to winning titles. It might be with a more defensive edge than an attacking edge that we've seen.
I don't know. To me, that's blasphemous to sit back there.
Yeah,
and listen,
I love those glory days and what Manchester United stood for and what they were about. But this group, the one thing I would say in conclusion, this group can't play that way, Glenn. I don't think this group are good enough to play. They can't control the ball enough to do as well as they could. You know, in the old era, they'd go 2v2 at the back. You know,
but Robbie, they spent 250.
And say everybody else can go forward. They haven't got those players at the moment.
Right.
So maybe it's horses for courses.
$250 million to sit on your 18-yard box? Come on.
Oh, I hear you.
You don't think those players wanted to?
Well spent?
You know as well as I do.
Good enough for titles.
You know as well as I do.
Question marks over lots of people at that group. Let's start with the goalkeeper.
No. I know, but just let me just interject this before you go on.
Go on.
$250 million. You know those players didn't want to sit back in that game and go for a point.
No.
Okay? You know that from being in locker rooms and not agreeing with tactics of a coach and still going out and fulfilling them. It's mind-blowing to me that that is accepted, and then people will so quickly change their tune and go, hey, that's a great point. I don't buy it.
Mm. Not sure if it's a great point, but I hear you make a good point. I'm looking at Anthony Martial. I'm looking at Mkhitaryan. I'm looking at Paul Pogba when he plays. It's such a defensive setup that the manager requires. Maybe we're not seeing the best of some of these players. Maybe it's not the way they can play. But in Jose Mourinho's eyes, it's about team defending first, not giving anything away, and then getting your goals or waiting for mistakes second. That's why they've drawn, I think they've drawn 14 games now, 10 of those at Old Trafford. I mean, that's unheard of.
Yeah.
10 draws at Old Trafford. You know, back in the day, would just not be acceptable.
But then we go back to the discussion, and I know you and I had it on this radio show that we just said, is he the right guy for the job?
That's always very much the question. And I think it's about, where are Manchester United right now? Is there somebody else out there who could produce the football that they want with the kind of money spent and deliver the trophies? Or does the profile and standing of Jose Mourinho mean that much to this football club that at the moment it's a marriage that both have to be happy with, although at some point you probably see it ending in divorce?
I like that, a marriage where we both have to be happy. That's a good one. Robbie, listen, as always, I love your opinions. Love your thoughts on the game. Keep up the great work with NBC. And as always, we thank you very much for taking the time out to visit with us for a couple of minutes.
Pleasure, mate. Anytime. Speak soon.
All right. That's the one and only Robbie Earle. Catch him every week on NBC. He's excellent. That'll do it tonight for Soccer Matters. Quick reminder here. Benefiting the Curing Children's Cancer Fund, cccfund.org, the big night with former Manchester United star Norman Whiteside and Chelsea's Bobby Tambling. Get your tickets at 281-812-4805, Facebook.com/HoustonRedArmy. Podcasts at podcastarena.com and iTunes. And to all you who tuned in, called in, and will listen on podcasts, thank you very much for listening to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Good night.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.